thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com Radio as a trusted business and investing news source. Today's featured guest, David Morgan, the Silver Investor. Well, returning to the show, the Silver Investor, David Morgan, our featured guest today, he pens the Morgan Report, which can be found at themorganreport.com. Welcome back, David Morgan.
Chris, great to be with you.
Start off our discussion today. Interesting story directly from a major silver mining CEO, one whom we've had on the show, has been a big supporter of GoldSeek for some time. This individual, after more than a decade of running a top not silver company, was approached by electronics maker First Majestic Silver Corp. This would be normal, I guess, if it was regular business, if it was a regular business practice. But the major Japanese electronics maker couldn't find, you know, enough silver stockpile, enough silver supply. This is the first time this has happened, as I mentioned, in about 13 years of business by Keith Neumeyer, that, of course, the CEO's name.
First of all, this is not the first time it's happened. There's an offtake agreement with Avino Silver, which is one of the companies that we had in the Morgan Report early on, and it's been a real stellar performer. And I own that stock. And also First Majestic I've owned for years. In fact, First Majestic was on our list at like $4 a share. We watched it go up to 24. We followed up with our stop losses outlined in how to use the Morgan Report. And then, you know, it's come back and actually traded under that, which is hard to believe with all that's happened from, you know, way back when we first recommended the company. But regardless, I would say it's slightly different than you outlined it. First of all, I would say that this electronics firm is looking ahead to where there could be further tightness in supply, and they want a direct, you know, a direct source. But it's not indicative of a tight supply at the present time. So in other words, these are people with vision. These are people that realize that in the future, there could be both demand on the silver supply, which means you have both industrial and investment demand. Basically, the industrial offtake is roughly 50% of the market. It's slightly more than that. It used to be about 35% of the market, and the market's growing. However, in all fairness, the industrial demand side of the equation has been flat, really, for quite a while now. Could it increase, as Keith outlined? I would say absolutely. Will it increase to, you know, some point where industrial demand is greater than the total mining and recycling supply? I'd say absolutely not. You know, price is a mitigator of anything that's wanted. So a lot of uneconomic silver projects right now at, you know, sub $20 silver become very economic at $30 silver. So that means more supply is sitting there in the ground. So, you know, say, where is peak silver? We outlined that in the book, The Silver Manifesto, and went through our numbers and the reasons and the whys and the wherefores. And if you look at that and really study it, it's something that you could read once. And if you're really good, you might get it all. And, you know, personally speaking, it's something that if I were to see that book, didn't write it, I would have to read it a couple times to really let it all filter in. But the point, I think, is this. These companies that have vision realize that in the future that the silver supply will continue to tighten on both sides, the industrial demand side, and because of that fact, or at least in their belief, they're willing to negotiate something. But I just want to be, for the record, clear that actually took place a couple years prior with Avino Silver and Gold. And now, of course, First Majestic is an NYSE stock run by one of the top CEOs, as you well know, Keith Neumeyer, as you named. And also, you know, because it's an NYSE stock, it carries a lot more clout than, let's say, Avino Silver might at this time. By the way, I do own First Majestic, if I didn't mention that.
That's a really interesting overview, and it's a little different from what we're hearing in the blogosphere today. Do you suspect other companies are being approached, similar offers made, or is this just an anomaly?
Well, actually, if you dig deep enough, what you'll find is those type of agreements are done and have been done for quite some time through a third party. So if you really look at what's called the book or what the over-the-counter agreements are with the people that produce it, which are the miners, and the people that use it on an absolutely required basis, which are the industrial users, what you'll find is that there is an intermediary that actually has a direct line with, let's say, the smelter or the refiner to take that silver and pipe it directly to the end user. So it's not a big shock. What is different is that the third party's been removed, and rather than go through a quote-unquote broker, they're doing it direct, which I think is smart on the part of the company, although it becomes more transparent. So it's obvious that, you know, the public wakes up and say, oh, this electronics firm, this conglomerate, this, you know, large corp is buying silver direct from a major producer like First Majestic. What does that mean? And what it means to me is that they're making sure that there is no third-party interference. Now, that's my opinion. And you know, Chris, I try to state the facts as much as I possibly can, but people pay us for our opinions, our, you know, ability to forecast the future, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I'm happy to see it. It does, to me, indicate what I've said since basically the beginning of the year. Silver and gold are trading differently than they have in a long time.
Almost 4 or 5 years of a downtrend, lower lows, lower highs, and now we finally see some excitement come back into the market. So certainly the underlying trend is starting to change. Do you suspect that this is a long-term theme, though? Could we just back and fill a number of years as we saw the S&P 500 do, as we saw the HGX housing market following its crash? Yeah, a lot of times, bear markets require 2 or 3 years to sort out.
Well, great question, and thanks for pointing that out. First of all, I will say I don't know. I mean, anyone that's really, you know, going to be honest is going to tell you that. Now, there'll be people that use, you know, computer software, and, you know, I have some. I have plenty of it, actually. But regardless, the market knows more than anybody. My take at this point is we've gotten a little bit overexcited with this first 4 months of the new year. We do have to back and fill into that space, which will probably take us through the summer doldrums. And I'm expecting a pretty strong finish to the end of the year, which is usually the seasonality of the gold and silver market. But it has not been for the last many years where we've gotten the lowest print of the year on the last trading day of the year. So I'm well aware of that, and I'll just watch the market closely to make sure that, you know, it's going to tell me which way it's going to go. And that's how I operate, and that's what I do for the premium subscribers, is I show them exactly how the market should be interpreted based on the methodology that I've used. So coming back on point, my work shows we can't go that far. Why not? Well, because there's too much pressure on the investment demand side because of what's going on in the global empire. The empire is breaking down. Major parties are admitting that, and even using the word collapse, you've got the bond king, Bill Gross. You've got Abe saying that, you know, things are looking shaky. Maybe there's going to be, you know, global problems, I'll put it softly. And so more and more are pretty much sticking their neck out because they don't want to be in a position politically where they say, well, you never said it, or you said the opposite. You know, they don't want to say something to the effect that, you know, this conspiracy theory doesn't mean anything and that type of thing. Well-known political figure, you know, you're peddling fiction by saying the economy isn't strong, wonderful, everything's great, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm very happy to see the position that we're in. We got a nice, strong start. We got good volume. Now we're back and fill. And I think, again, that we're going to probably be up and away. Not majorly, as you well know, Chris, you do technical work as well, unless, you know, there's a huge black swan, which is obviously out there. There's so many of them, in fact. Nonetheless, without that type of an event, it will have to work through certain levels, but it will do that on the way up pretty rapidly, and then we'll get into that parabolic move that we already witnessed in 2011 in the first quarter. And we'll see it again, except this time it's going to make that move look like a, you know, warm up.
You know, I think it's a great point. And if we take a look at just the XAU, which from, you know, the nadir of the trough there to its recent peak or zenith, we saw at least a 100% move. Still holding on to the better portion of that advance. But, you know, the underlying bullion, gold and silver, has not performed, although it's been spectacular. We haven't seen that 100% move yet. It's obviously not as leveraged as the shares. I guess what I'm getting at is for the naysayers out there who don't think the metals, you know, silver can run back to 30, that would represent approximately, you know, a 100% advance from the lows or close to it.
Well, absolutely. It's one of the prime indicators that I look at. It has to be on volume. In other words, it can't be like it's got to be where the big money's coming in, and it is. And that's confirmation that we're back to the bull market. Sure, we may touch or kiss the launch point, which is what I expect. and we could go lower. We could test the old lows, whatever it was. I forget the exact numbers. Like, I know we traded a touch under 14 on silver, and I think we touched 1059 or something in that range on gold. We could hit those levels again. I really, really doubt it. But the stocks are telling us and screaming at us and, you know, ringing the bell at the bottom that the bottom is in. So the way to really make money in this market is to buy your physical bullion position and then get into the paper. And I know that I'm anti-paper and I don't want to confuse anybody, but what I just said, I'll repeat. Once you have established a physical, you can touch it position, the way to beat the bankers, the way to make a lot of fiat and then turn it into physical is to go into the paper markets. And there's no better way than to outline what we do, which is top-tier, mid-tier, and speculative companies, well-diversified, and watch these things go from 35 cents to 12 bucks, like I did on a Molly company, for an example. Look at Silver Standard. We had that 65 cents Canadian. I think that went to $40. We got out at 21. Hecla Mining, we got in at 50 cents. It got out at $5. A TED bag on an NYSE stock. We did good on Hecla Mining before anybody even knew our name or what the Morgan Report was about. And that was the same exact performance, a 10-bagger on an NYSE stock when it was the top-performing stock in the entire stock exchange in 1979. Everybody knew Hecla Mining in 1979 because of the Hunt brothers and what silver did in that 1 year, going from $6 to $50. I think we're going to see that again, Chris. In fact, I think we're going to see something even better than that just next time because it's a global empire that's being destroyed, which means all currencies will be seeking gold and silver. Once that happens, there's really no limit. Now, I'm being a bit, I don't want to be hypey, but I'm being accurate in a way because in the reality of the situation, there is a denominator of zero. There is no upside in a paper price. That's in theory. Do all paper currencies fail to absolute zero? No, they do not. There will be an intervention. There will be a reset. There'll be a new Bretton Woods. There'll be the SDR that's proposed. I mean, there'll be a lot of things that will be on the table that could take place. All no cash, all electronic form. I mean, there's a lot out there that we all know about. We're all looking toward, and everyone's asking the same question, what is the next step going to look like? And the answer is really, I don't know, and very few know, and even the powers that be may not know exactly because there's infighting at the top of the pyramid.
Still a lot of negativity by those outside of the precious metals crowd. The advance this year, I mean, the hottest commodities around, although we all know they're much more than just commodities. That's the way they view this. They view them as hyperactive commodities that were oversold, and there's been some short covering, maybe a short squeeze, if you will, at the bottom. Here's the problem, I think, with their thesis. Take a look at the last time we had a peak, right, in around 1979, 1980. The underlying economics supported a peak. I mean, we had runaway inflation that was then capped with incredibly high real interest rates, which was fomented by the Federal Reserve. Right now, we have just the opposite. You remember Barsky and Summers' seminal paper, where they outline one of the most important essential ingredients for a gold and silver rally is negative real rates of return. Fed maybe will get one more quarter point rate hike this year. It's looking maybe July of this year. Give us your thoughts on the economics behind a potential explosive rally in the precious metals, please.
Well, I mean, I've been saying for quite some time, and especially in the, you know, lectures that I do throughout various areas, you know, Sweden, I just came back from, and you know, Canada, wherever I'm asked. But regardless, the biggest leg up is yet to take place. I believe it's in our future. I believe the time frame is probably 2017-18 in that range. I don't think it's 5 years out. I think it's more like 3 years out. I think it'll go into the financial record books, and it's going to be based on fear more than greed. It'll be because there's the perception, and perception is reality in most cases, which means that the public will come into the market to preserve whatever capital they have, and they'll come into the gold market in a very big way. But when gold gets to the point of affordability for the average person that has some savings, they'll move into the silver market. And since the silver market is a much smaller market than the gold market, you'll see something similar to what we saw in the 1980 peak that you referred to. Gold from January to January basically went from like the 300 to the 850 level, or silver went again from 6 to 800, 6 to 50. So you had like a triple versus an eight bagger. And this is what I expect to happen again, except this time the numbers could be even larger and I could be, you know, off. I mean, I, you know, never said I had an absolute perfect crystal ball, but I'm, you know, studied monetary history for a very long time. And we've looked at what these banks are doing to resolve the problem. And the main problem about the problem is that the problem is not even addressed. And I know I said problem three words. I used alliteration to make this point. Until you can, one, address the problem, you're not going to solve it. And it's a debt problem. And they're trying to solve it with more debt. I mean, how preposterous is that? And these are the so-called leaders. These are people that are actually exempt from leadership roles, as Alan Greenspan so eloquently pointed out, that basically the Federal Reserve is a private corp owned mostly by Europeans, I added that doesn't have to answer to anybody. And, of course, there is a very big tie to the federal government. I don't want to discount that too much, but in theory, they don't have to answer anybody and have done things that have been, let's say, surprises to the market from time to time. But they are not all powerful, although many people think they are. They are not. The market's more powerful than even the Fed. So what I'm saying is that look out for what's happening ahead. It's going to be more volatile. And people, as the trust breaks down, as the confidence breaks down, people go to where they trust and have the most confidence. And that is absolutely 100% physical paper. People will go to cash. And now if cash is outlawed, that will speed the movement into the top of the pyramid, which is the precious metal. So I see a big run to cash. I see a big run to the U.S. dollar. And that's going to get a lot of gold bugs upset. Why isn't gold going up? But it's a step in the process of the breakdown crisis. So step in the process is you're going to see a run to cash. You're going to see a run to dollar. You're going to see the dollar being like the king again. And then you're going to say, where do we go now? And when that psychology takes place and that takes hold, there's nothing that can undo it. There's no fever like gold fever. And once that psychology breaks, look out. The run to gold will be unprecedented.
And I think the key here will be, you know, a lot of people are turning to Bitcoin and alternatives like that, thinking that it will be a safe haven. I think they might be missing out on some of the limitations there to transport. Of course, you have the electronic convenience there of Bitcoin. But at the same time, I think there's always going to be some big question marks on who owns what. I mean, for instance, we had a Bitcoin major dealer and marketplace sued to the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars because they, you know, had a minor glitch and lost an enormous amount, something like $250 million worth of Bitcoins just evaporated in midair. Well, gold has a tendency not to evaporate, and so does silver. Isn't it interesting that we read story after story on the mainline media that cash is being decimated around the world? I mean, we see government after government policymakers doing everything they can globally to eliminate reliance on basic hard currency. The whole push is towards debit cards, electronic transactions. Big Brother wants to have its fingers in the pie. It wants to know every single tax dollar you can extract much more readily. You might hear all kinds of arguments saying, well, it discourages money laundering and illegal transactions, but in reality, it limits freedom. And maybe that's a topic for another discussion. What I was really driving towards here was your point of this mad dash to cash, let's call it. I suspect that most people will be disappointed by hard cash, and I think you do as well. Let's start off with Bitcoin and electronic alternatives. How much of a threat is this to bullion?
Well, that's a great question. The answer, I really don't know. If you want my take on it, you can Google David Morgan, My Two Bits About Bitcoin, I think was the title of the article. I'm free market, and you know I can't be a hypocrite, although I'm sure there's those that may think so, but I do my best to be consistent. And so if the free market says Bitcoin's the way to go, who am I? I'm just some guy here that's, you know, an advocate of honesty and, you know a lot of things, but honest money, you know, correctness in the political system, in the financial system. Of course, it'd be nice in the political system as well. Regardless, I'm not a big fan of Bitcoin, but I'm not against it either. I think it's an alternative, and I think a lot of the gold-silver community have moved into it. I have no problem with that. What my concerns are is the same as yours. I think unless you have the best base of your foundational savings program, which is physical gold and silver, then if you then going into Bitcoin, I think, would be fine. If you were electronic dependent only, think about it for a minute. It goes back to what you said about Big Brother. You are an electronic format. That means you have to be tied to the internet. It also means, depending on who you want to look at, but you can use the NSA as an example, you know, how secure is it really as far as the prying eyes are concerned? The last thing is basically the research I've done, it was done, and I'll give a shout out to Charles Savoy, who's not very well known, sent me his research, and he's one of the best, and I'm so proud to say that he contacted me so very early on when I started the website. The CIA was basically the first ones to put out a white paper looking for an all-electronic alternative, I'll call it, quote-unquote, banking system. That wasn't the words used in their paper. So you have to, you know, look really deep and down the rabbit hole, and I'm not seeing anything that I know for a fact, but you could make an argument that the beginning of the electronic alternative currencies outside the banking system may have been something that was forecast or anticipated by the powers that be. And I'm not saying I can prove that, but it is interesting that I can show you, and I'm not going to put it in the public domain, it'd be something private, what was out there in this white paper. So who knows? You know, again, I'm free market. If you want to go Bitcoin or an alternative to Bitcoin, I'm all for it. And let me go a step further. A lot of the push of the Morgan Report going forward is for financial technology, fintech, as it's referred to. And I'm looking very strongly at alternatives outside the banking system. Bitcoin is one of them. I'm not trying to be a hypocrite here. I think there are alternatives that will manifest that will be bullion backed. So there'll be a physical backing in the electronic form that you could get, let's say, a real Bitcoin, meaning, you know, I know they make them, but what I'm saying is, you know, an equivalent gold or silver position type of thing. So it's a developing technology. It's very interesting. I'm doing my homework on it. I've just ordered two books from Amazon. I have a friend that's very connected there and others in the industry, which you probably know by first name. And so I'm looking at that because I think that any time there is extreme amount of pressure, there will be a relief valve somewhere. And the relief valve is that the free market, sometimes called the black market, will be an alternative. And that's what we're seeing, especially the millennials. I mean, how many millennials do they have bank accounts? So there's the system is ripe for an alternative. I think the only power structure that really gets that is London, which is basically the base of the Anglo-American Empire. If you study it closely enough, and I'll be writing about more of this in the future, is they're actually embracing financial technology. Why? Because they want to continue to control. And if you're moving out of the traditional banking system that you and I, Chris, have known our whole lives, and you move into this, like I'm on my phone, and I do a peer-to-peer payment, and it's outside of the banking system, they don't want that outside of their control. They want to be in on it. So very interesting times ahead, rapid change. There's what I would call maybe the revolution, you know, meaning there could be a monetary revolution. In fact, I would suggest that maybe too strong a word, but maybe not. I want people to think that there are all these alternatives out there and they're popping up here, there, and everywhere. There'll be winners and losers, but I like the idea that people are saying, you know what? We can create our own system of settlement. We can do it without the banks. We don't need you. And this, of course, is taking place, but on a very low level. But all things start at the beginning, don't they?
You're looking at it from the right angle. You know, supply creates its own demand. Options for the everyday financial transaction could drive a Bitcoin-like alternative, and that's what Bitcoin seems to be doing. It's not putting cash out of business. It's not putting banking out of business. It's just creating its marketplace of its own. NSA, as we all know, thanks to Snowden, has its finger in every transaction online and every conversation online, and you can be sure if they don't, someone above them does. The encryption, I think, is a bit outdated, even though I know everyone thinks it's uncrackable. The NSA and the U.S. government are 20 to 30 years ahead of us with encryption. Factoring prime numbers is no problem for them. I know this is going to be hard for some of our listeners to believe, but factoring enormously large prime numbers, which is what our entire financial security system is based on, is really just a simple process. So if they really want to crack into an account, they can do it. But, you know, again, that's another topic. Let's move back to precious metals. I wanted to ask you about financial instruments such as shares in, let's say, the S&P 500, in Google. Let's take Google, for example, Netflix, Amazon, Tesla. You can buy these shares no matter what the price is. There's always going to be a market. I'd like for our listeners to be reintroduced to the concept that gold and silver, there's a limited supply. There may be a market, there may be a paper market, but once confidence is lost in the ETFs and their ability to perform the contracts, the only thing left are the metals. Maybe silver is suddenly at $100 an ounce, but there's always going to be that proviso if you can find it.
There is a limited amount. There's, you know, the paper paradigm in the gold and silver industry is, you know, roughly 100 to 1. You can make it even 10 to 1. And it goes back to the goldsmiths. I mean, they realized when they were giving out warehouse receipts that about only 10% ever came back and actually exchanged gold. So they started floating worthless paper, but no one knew it because the system worked with a float of 9 to 1 or 10 to 1 roughly. So the whole banking system is based on that premise of fractional reserve. Well, you have fractional reserve banking in the bullion side, and which means that everyone's happy as long as no one really steps up to the window and says, give me gold for this certificate. I own X amount of gold in the XYZ corporation. And because of that, things are just happy to go along the way they are. It also provides a fictional supply because all markets move on supply and demand. So if you can increase the supply by a factor of 10, then what do you think it's going to do to the supply-demand curve? Well, it's going to move it down because there's all this fictional supply out there. So that's a good way to manage the market. When the confidence level, as you said, I'm just repeating back to you really, gets to the critical juncture we talked about earlier in your show, that people say, you know, I don't really trust this anymore. I've got this pretty looking certificate that says I own X amount of gold. I'm taking it over to my bank or over to my broker and I'm going to cash it in. And they say, get in line. We've had a run on the bank. Those are my words, not theirs. They'll use some, you know, obfuscation of, you know, well, there's been a delay and we've been ordered by the Fed to only allocate what's remaining due to the fact that there's a blah, 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 blah. Make it up. They'll make it up. So it's better to be safe than sorry. And, you know, I'm nothing against the ETFs or, you know, any of these paper markets, as long as you start with a foundational amount that's safe. In other words, let's just take a real rough example. Let's say you're gray-haired like me and you're, you know, so where would you be? I'd say in that case, you know, and it's individual, you know, maybe you're at 30% physical, 40% physical. So, you know, let's say that all my top tier, mid tier and speculative stocks and the precious metals go to zero. I would be extremely unhappy, but I'd have such a strong physical position and the paper price of it or the value of it would go up so much that I'd be more than well protected. On the other hand, again, the way to beat the bankers is if there's a physical lockup in the metals, which I expect there will be, then these shares will go into the stratosphere. You won't be able to put a price on them because that's the only thing that's remaining. And although they're a piece of paper, if they're the real companies, such as First Majestic, as we talked about, or Avino, for example, these things will have a price that will go crazy because it's the only thing left. And there's a small, small market. People don't realize the word precious and what it really, really means. I mean, if you look at three Olympic-sized swimming pools full of gold, and that's the entire Earth's supply over 5,000 years, and you go out on the moon with your big telescope and you look down on the planet and you compare three Olympic-sized swimming pools to how many Olympic-sized swimming pools exist on the planet, or better yet, how many gas stations exist on the planet. Get a perspective on the commodity oil versus the quote-unquote commodity slash it's now money, gold, and how little gold there is compared to how much oil there is or how much wheat there is or any other commodity. So we're in a predicament and there's no way out. And the bankers know it. And of course, they're trying to stay ahead of the game and perhaps they are. But from my perspective, just because they have it planned out, we're going to this and that, we're going to let this one collapse, we're slowly going to let the yen go up against the dollar, and we're going to let China go down again, you know, whatever. I mean, whatever machinations they've come up with to control the situation, the more they try to control it, I would say the more it's going to be out of control. And the problem with most, well, the more you try to control it, I mean, you're balancing an upside-down pyramid is what you're doing. I mean, a pyramid is the most stable structure known to man. And the financial system is built on an upside-down pyramid, which implies logically it's the most unstable situation you could possibly have. And unless you continue to grow the base, the pyramid's going to topple over, which, you know, doesn't make sense from what I just said. But the point is that the derivatives market is what's ruling everything. So it's a Ponzi scheme on top of Ponzi scheme on top of bet on top of side bet on top of bet on bet on top of that. And it's all precarious as can be. It's the fall collapse of complex societies. It's the collapse of a complex financial system that nobody understands. And everybody's betting their bottom dollar on the fact that the computers and the electronic world is so powerful that everything's under control.
You talk about three Olympic-sized pools full of gold bullion, and that's essentially the accessible reserves or supply of gold, at least above ground now, circulating in the world and from antiquity until today. Hold on to that image and keep in mind that there's roughly the same amount of gold as there was 30 years ago at the last peak. But now the population of the world has grown by at least double. The amount of wealth, let's just say, has increased. Add in derivatives. Ease of access through eBay and other alternatives, a confluence of events.
Fortunately, it's a reality, and these events happen rarely. This is not something that takes place every year in the financial markets. It's, I don't want to overplay the Shemitah thing, but I've read the book and listened to a couple of Jonathan Kahn's interviews, and I know Jeff Berwick, and I was actually well aware of it probably prior to Berwick, not that it matters, but the point being is that like a jubilee, which is 7/7 or every 50 years, this is something that's possibly a once-in-a-lifetime event. Certainly it's taken place before. I mean, if you look at monetary history, it's the Weimar Republic's one that's most commonly referred to. But if you look at the book, The Silver Manifesto, and you open up to the part of currency failures, you'll see the currency failures between 1981 and 1990, and I don't know what they are, 40 countries. And then the failure between 1991 and 2000, I think it's like 50 or 60 countries. But this is all brushed under the carpet because there's the ability of these countries that have a failed currency like Zimbabwe to use the U.S. dollar. And that's dollars in physical form, what we talked about earlier. So going forward, we do have a synergy of events. We have a distrust in the political system. We have a distrust in the food system with GMOs. We have a distrust in the water supply with fluoridation and what's going on with the, chemical bases. We have a distrust of what's going on in the atmosphere. So basically, we have corruption across the board. We have physical corruption. We've got the Fukushima. We've got the BP oil spill. So we have a confluence of synergistic events that are compounding one on top of the other. So in a mathematical formula type of thing, going back to the Bitcoin, I just watched The Man Who Saw Infinity, and I got a pretty strong math background. But yes, it can do what you said. So coming back on point, we're going to see a synergistic effect where 1 plus 1 plus 1 doesn't equal 3, 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 30. That's an exponential function. So when the panic starts, and when that, third person walks up to the bullion bank and says, here's a cert I've had for 10 years. I've got this much gold. I want the gold physically. And they say, oh, no, you don't. He says, oh, yes, I do. I'm standing for delivery. That is when no one can predict exactly when. And that's just an analogy or a metaphor to the what's going to cause it. But what's going to cause it is a shift in psychology. I don't trust even these physical dollars anymore. I can't get them or I don't want them. I rather have the real deal. And there's so little relative to the amount of fiat available in all currencies. And that's why you'll see gold go up against all currencies. Yeah, it's the anti-US dollar for now, because the dollar will be the last man standing. I have little doubt about that. And the alternatives that the BRICS have put in are certainly some protection. But whether or not it's robust enough, if it's anti-fragile enough or not, at this point, I doubt it. But that's my take. That's my opinion. It can't be proven. Only the market will prove true or false on that. So we're in a situation, again, that I want to emphasize where it's very rare that this will take place. But I have little doubt it will happen in my lifetime.
I just wanted to mention, you brought up The Man Who Saw Infinity or New Infinity, and of course, that's the story of Srinivasa Ramanujan. I have the book here on my desktop. It's free now for anyone who's interested in listening to our voices. I'll send you a copy, and it's just must read. In fact, I would argue that the author has composed one of the finest books, not just on mathematics or any subject. You can't put it down. even folks who don't care for reading. You won't be able to put this tome down. I have a link to the free story about how G.W. Hardy, one of the world's greatest mathematicians in Oxford at the time, and identified Ramanujan just in the remote nowhere, essentially self-taught. He found a remarkable book by a man who became renowned later, but he just didn't require any proofs at all, what we call today shortcuts in his mathematical endeavors. And this remarkable book is still available. I have a copy I'd like to give to my son, and when he's a few years older. And I think it's just a fantastic story. But, the movie, huge fan of Jeremy Irons. What you want is the book here. And I'll bet you've read that. If you don't have a copy, I'll fire one over to you. I'd like to discuss one more topic, and that is the idea that silver has an enormous amount of uses, and it is rarely reclaimed after it's used. Here's an example. Solar power. They have dropped in price. And I remember when solar panels were only for the very wealthy, even the elite. Well, now a family can have a small solar array for just a few $1,000s or less. Each solar panel has roughly 1 ounce, requires a roughly 1 ounce of silver to produce. The hyperbolic decline in the price of solar panels and the extreme affordability of silver is creating its own demand. Do you want to just run with the ball and give us an idea of whether or not this solar power revolution could bode well for silver investors?
Well, a couple points. First, the recycling industry is actually pretty robust. There is a lot of silver that makes it to the landfill and never gets recycled. Having said that, if you look at the two silver studies, and of course I buy them and study them every year and have since, I don't know what, when I was much younger. The amount of silver recycled is like 170 million ounces a year. So that's a significant amount, especially when you compare it to the amount of silver that was mined on an annual basis up to about 1985, never rose above 350 million ounces. After that, there was a change in the technology to how to mine, and that was a big push into bringing more silver above ground than ever before. Coming back on point, so there is a fair amount of recycling. On the solar situation, I wrote Silver Over the Next Decade, and in that study, one of the main points I looked at was the solar industry. And at the time, it had not an exponential curve, but a very strong linear curve at about a 45-degree angle, and it was projecting solar to use about 140 million ounces of silver on an annual basis relative to about 2016. Remember, this study was done in 2010, so it's projecting out about 6-7 years. That projection was actually accurate for about three or four years. Since then, it's leveled off and actually butt back down. What's interesting, if you did it on a solar panel basis, it would fit that curve almost exactly. The problem is it doesn't fit the curve in the solar usage, the silver usage in solar went down is because, like anything economic, you squeeze the margins. If you can get X amount of power by using half the amount of silver, you're going to do it. And that's what's taken place. In other words, solar panels have become much more efficient. Silver's not the only component. There's other silicon, and a lot of stuff that goes into one. And the manufacturing process, taking it over to China primarily. So there are a lot of reasons that on a per-panel basis, not only squeeze the amount of silver per panel and increase the efficiency, meaning you still get as much power as per panel as you used to, it's distorted. It hasn't distorted the curve. It is what it is. The market's the market. So where are we now? Well, I'm still bullish on the solar, meaning that India looks like they're going to produce a lot of electricity using solar. So I think you'll see a swing up in the curve. And also, as you said, the demand situation. Yes, I do have some solar here. It's just basically backup as a put up kind of a thing. In other words, some panels that I can just throw up. And I've used it, in fact, and charge a set of gigantic batteries and run my electronics from that. But back on point. So, yeah, the more affordable it is, especially in some locations. Now, solar is efficient as, burning coal. No, it's not. But it's certainly a lot of people want independence. And in certain areas, solar is the only thing you can have. You can take a mountain cabin out in the middle of nowhere. You're not going to have a power line over there. So I am, neutral as far as efficiency, looking at it from an engineering perspective, but looking at it from an economic perspective, I think we have seen a dip, and I don't think we'll see an upswing in solar demand. but I don't think it will be as robust as Jessica Cross indicated when she put out her report in 2010, which is what I referred to in mine, citing her work in that area. Of course, I added my own thoughts, but nonetheless, an important and significant part, which leads us all the way back to the beginning of the interview, which means, you know, why are these electronic companies going to major silver producers and saying, give me direct, I don't want a middleman? And the reason is that it's not just solar, it's electronic gadgets. As I've said in the past, you know, silver is the best technology stock you can buy. Hey, it's a physical element. So there's a lot going on across the board, and one that we never talk about is what is the military use of the silver supply? And no one really knows the exact amount, but a lot of mil-spec electronics are driven by silver. You think that their solar panels aren't the top-notch solar panels? What do you think about their battery life? You think they're using lithium everywhere? Yeah, they use a lot of lithium. But when it hits a mil-spec and it's got to be out there for days and days, guess what? They're using silver-based batteries. So there's a lot that goes on that really isn't known. I mean, there are some enigmas in the silver market. I certainly never claim to know it all. Certainly, I continue to research and learn more. But there's no one on the planet that has every detail about any commodity, let alone the silver market.
I have a slightly different view on the exponential growth of solar panels, and there's a couple of reasons why. Firstly, gold and silver, the best conductors. Of course, gold, slightly better electronic conductor, but silver, of course, is much more cost-effective at, let's say, 70 times less per ounce. It's viewed as insignificant in the process right now. That's going to change. I'm sure you'd agree. There is, from what I've read, absolutely no alternative. Copper cannot take the place of silver in extremely sensitive electronics, and that's what we really have today, advanced electronics. And I'd also add that we're looking for, according to several recent studies, exponential growth in the demand for solar power. There are some indications that the entire coal business around the world, even in China, and of course the United States is the Saudi Arabia, as you know, of coal, a complete shutdown of all coal production. Firstly, because of environmental reasons. Secondly, because of the rise, the exponential increase in affordability of solar power. So the combination, another confluence of events, could send silver almost to parity with gold.
Well, I think it'll be a good year, not a great year. I want to offer everybody a free report. It's on themorganreport.com. All we need is a first name and an email address. And it's a 12-page report that I wrote myself. You'll get access to a movie about the Age of Empire and the collapse and where we are, with some solutions at the end of the movie, which are definitely worth considering. A lot of other information. If you go to, if you use Twitter at all, look for hashtag Silver Affiliate. I've got some information there. So you, if you're a silver or a gold stacker, you can actually get paid while you stack. And then the video, the Twitter feed is at SilverGuru22, and the YouTube channel is SilverGuru.
We appreciate your comments here on the markets and look forward to more of those in 2016.
My pleasure. Thank you, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garnero, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment venture. Bank and founding director. Their Sal George project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Rhea project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
Goldseek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. We'll be right back.